This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss, and my guest today is Dr. Gregory Burns, author of multiple books, including the New York Times bestseller, How Dogs Love Us. A neuroscientist, professor of psychology at Emory University, and an MD, Burns last week published his latest book, Cow Puppy, An Unexpected Friendship and a Scientist's Journey into the Secret World of Cows. Cow Puppy chronicles some of what transpired when Burns and his wife stepped into a decidedly different world, buying a farm outside of Atlanta and developing a small herd of cattle. But this isn't yet another tale of an ill-equipped city slicker diving into farm life and misadventures that ensue. Sure, in Cow Puppy, Burns does recount his share of misadventures, mostly occasioned by his early travels along the learning curve. However, what sharply distinguishes this I Bought a Farm tale from most is that Burns, as an academic and a neuroscientist, notably has used MRI scanners to examine the brains and minds of humans and an array of animals, carefully studied the behavior of his herd, and reported on it. He was struck by what he learned, including the ability to forge close relationships with these animals, shaping his own behavior accordingly. So Cow Puppy unspools into a human bovine love story of sorts. Burns doesn't just become fascinated, but kind of smitten, really. Laced with the observation of a scientist about issues ranging from the cattle's personal space to how they play to ways they communicate. We'll delve into these aspects of Cow Puppy and others when I speak with Dr. Gregory Burns in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WNF. A programming note, in just under a week, on September 3rd, WNF's Fall Fun Drive begins, and I'll be raising money on Talking Animals on the very next day, Wednesday, September 4th. My assigned goal for this drive, $3,000, huge for an hour-long show. So, really learned over the years that the only real prospect to reaching that kind of goal in that kind of time is to receive pledges before the fund drive show. So if you like Talking Animals, if you appreciate the work we've done now in our 21st year, please consider donating before September 4th, how about today? Any amount you can swing would be great and appreciated. Just please visit WNF.org in the upper right-hand corner, click on Donate Now, and on the secure donation form that opens up towards the bottom, labeled Designate to pick a show, there's a drop-down menu with options of where to direct your donation. Please select TLA, Talking Animals, so that our show is credited with your donation. Thank you very much. And speaking of thank yous, as always, we have exclusive thank you gifts for pledges of various levels, including a pair of fantastic tickets to see Squeeze and Boy George in concert at the Bay Care Sound in Clearwater. Also, awesome tickets to see comedian and Roastmaster General Jeff Ross at the Strata Center and some other Talking Animals gifts. So, meanwhile, coming up later in today's program, I'll speak with Reagan Blessinger, marketing manager at the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, discussing their Paws for Literacy program, which enables kids who love animals to spend time with them at the shelter while enjoying a book or improving their reading skills. So, yes, they're reading to the dogs or the cats right there in the shelter. Paws for Literacy sessions happen on Tuesdays and Thursdays. We'll hear more about this when we talk with Reagan Blessinger a bit later in today's show. Right now, though, let's discuss various, sometimes surprising, facets of cattle that my guest, Dr. Gregory Burns, experienced after he and his wife bought that farm and recounted in his new book, Cow Puppy. With a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Dr. Gregory Burns back to Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Dr. Burns.
Hi, Duncan.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals.
My pleasure.
Congrats on the book. I found it enormously engaging. I learned a lot from it, and I'll... pretty safe to say I'll never look at cows quite the same way again. Surely want to discuss several of the experiences and observations you recount in the book, especially about the herd of cattle you assembled on your farm. But first, I want to go back in time, not too far back, really, but just when you decided to buy the farm. You were a veteran professor, an accomplished researcher, a best-selling author. So what sort of change were you seeking when you said, hey, let's buy a farm?
This was back in 2020, so it was at the peak of the pandemic, and I think probably like a lot of people, I was just stuck on my home office doing everything over the computer and Zoom and, you know, feeling kind of disconnected from everything, and I figured, well, hey, I can do this from anywhere. So decided to probably fulfill my lifelong fantasy of moving to the country and living my Green Acres fantasy, I guess.
Okay, well, you know, so it sounds like that was a long-standing thing that you just took the occasion of the pandemic to sort of act on, because it is, it's a pretty monumental way to alter your life, certainly from what the life you were leading prior to that.
It was, and I mean, you know, given the context of the things that were happening at the time, so I had been running this project where I trained dogs to go in MRI scanners, and the pandemic kind of, you know, put the nail in the coffin on that. You know, we couldn't work with the dogs, we couldn't work with the people, and even if we could, everyone had to wear masks, and the dogs didn't really like that. And so it was just like, okay, it's time for a change.
Yeah, as a side note, by the way, I really want to focus, obviously, on Cow Puppy and everything kind of therein, but just having spent a fair amount of time, for better or worse, in recent years in MRI scanners myself, I'm just wondering, like, how dogs cope with the noise, and I also kind of long wondered, since you did that kind of work, or do dogs get claustrophobic as far as we know?
Oh, that's a good question. So one of the things that we learned early on in training dogs to go in scanners is they don't get claustrophobic. You know, it's to them, and done properly, it's just a game. So, you know, they see a tube and it's like, oh boy, let's go crawl in the tube. And that's essentially the same as, you know, what they do in agility competitions. They have to go through a tube. So the claustrophobia is not an issue. The noise, however, is. And potentially a bigger issue for dogs than it is for humans, because of course their hearing is more sensitive. They're also very sensitive to the vibrations of the scanner itself. And to get a dog used to doing that, it's a slow process. You have to acclimate them at low levels of the noise, pair it with treats, make it a game, everything just to make it fun, because they don't know what it means. And so it could be good, it could be bad. So the training process was to make it fun.
Make it some appealing, and they'll roll with the noise as much as it's probably startling at first.
Exactly. Although, you know, I'll be honest, you know, not all dogs are open to that. And as the project went on, we would have a tryout process to try to tell which dogs would be more sensitive to the noise and therefore not have much fun doing it. And similar to humans, we also have to take care to protect their hearing. So part of the training process was to teach them to wear either earmuffs or earplugs. And to be honest, they probably disliked that more than the noise itself.
Yeah, I would see a lot of paw moving that head earplugs or headphones or whatever off their face as soon as possible. So okay, well, that was just sort of a side note. Let's get back, of course, to our main subject at hand today, which is Cow Puppy. So I felt like a big theme that emerges in Cow Puppy is transformation. Well, I guess, first of all, how would you respond to that observation?
I think that's absolutely correct, because the book is very much about cows, but it's also about my journey on several levels. One, from being kind of city boy, moving to the country and learning about country life. But it's also deeper than that, I think. It's kind of a transformation of me to having a better relationship and understanding to the land. So if one sets out to have livestock of any type, any large animal, not only are you having to manage the animals, but you have to manage the land that they live on. And so that was a big part of my transformation, is really kind of coming to this place where it's like, okay, now I'm the steward of this place. I have to take care of the animals. I have to take care of the land and learn that language, and also learn to speak the language of my new neighbors, which was very different.
Yeah, well, there's so much. And in fact, I guess maybe even just to break it into two separate but parallel parts, what about the farm life did you find most transformative? And then what about cow life did you find most transformative?
Yeah, so farm life is hard. That's probably the first eye-opening revelation you get is, okay, you want to grow things, that's fine, but it's not so easy. You know, all the beautiful pictures of, you know, I guess you call it farm porn, it takes hard work. And the next thing you realize as soon as you start trying to grow things is that everything wants to eat them. Bugs, other animals, and it's just kind of this constant process of dealing with that, the randomness of nature and weather. You learn to become, one, self-sufficient, or at least modestly so, where you can depend on your neighbors. But ultimately, it's you who are responsible for the land and the animals you're caring for. And also to become resilient in the sense of, you know, you have to roll with it. You have to adapt because no matter what your plans are, it ain't going to turn out that way.
Yeah, it seemed like there was a lot of improvising and a lot of, as I mentioned, I guess, in the introduction, kind of traveling, especially early on, traveling, learning curve. But I'm sure that kind of conformed with your expectations because you don't just sort of make that drastic a change and buy a farm and say, okay, well, this is going to be smooth sailing from day one.
I suppose in hindsight it's easy to say that, I mean, but certainly at the time we made the decision, that wasn't kind of in my mind. It's like, oh, let's do this. This is going to be really hard. Because, you know, anytime you have a big change, it's like you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, you can only learn that when you're upset by it or your day has gone sideways or somebody's ravage the crops or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, and it continues to be that way. Every day when I feel like it's like, oh, hey, I'm starting to get the hang of this, nature reminds me, it's like, no, you don't.
And you're in, I guess, based on the book, I'm guessing this is probably year four or thereabouts? Or
yeah, so that's right. So we're coming up on 4 years.
Okay. Well, let me let folks know who might just be tuning in. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you did just tune in, my guest is Dr. Gregory Burns, a neuroscientist, professor, and author of multiple books, most recently Cow Puppy, An Unexpected Friendship and a Scientist's Journey into the Secret World of Cows. If you have questions for Dr. Burns or would like to offer a comment about cows or farm life or anything related, please call 813-239-9663. Email dj at wmnf.org. Or text 813-433-0885. So, Dr. Burns, before we continue, and I'm sure this is going to be a case of I told you so, we're having an unusual amount of static on the line. So if it's okay, I'm just going to call you right back on a different line and hope that we aren't dogged by what sounds like a little bit staticky connection.
Okay.
So far.
Okay.
I'll call you right back. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, we're back with Dr. Burns, author of, again, Cow Puppy, An Unexpected Friendship and a Scientist's Journey into the Secret World of Cows, and we're just going to resume our conversation. So to me, there are so many fascinating things raised in the book, we clearly won't have time to address them all, but let's try for as many as we can. I think it may be helpful to start here, kind of the way you start the book, with cattle terminology, just because I think it may be reasonable to think a lot of people listening may not know the distinctions that you draw in those terms. So do you want to walk us through those terms, or I can read them off? Or
Yeah, sure. I call all of them cows, as I think most people do, and that's just casual speech. But actually, a cow is a female who has had at least one calf. Then there is a heifer, which is a female who hasn't had a calf. And then we get into the male side, which they're either bulls, in which case they are intact, and steers who have been neutered.
And that pretty much covers the basics, I guess.
Yeah, that's it. That's basically two forms of gender for each sex.
Cool. Let's talk about something that I mentioned also kind of in the introduction, which is personal space. So in my circles, the concept of personal space doesn't really come up much unless, let's say, a new acquaintance stands way too close in a conversation and you later mention that to your spouse or colleague or friend or someone. But your chapter on personal space covers all kinds of ground, including indicating that it actually began, the term itself, with the study of animals in the 1950s. So can you talk a little bit about personal space from a few angles, including this kind of scientific history I just mentioned, the importance of personal space to animals relative to territory, and as it relates to cattle, particularly your herd, and how those boundaries can evolve as they did clearly with Lucy, for example?
Yeah, so personal space is important for people, and I think probably the most important thing to keep in mind is that it's dynamic. So personal space can expand or shrink as the circumstances dictate. So, and then within personal space, we kind of divide it into different zones. So there's kind of the part that kind of extends out like an aura and can be quite far, which we would probably call extrapersonal space. And that in particular is the thing that can expand and shrink. So in terms of animals, their extrapersonal space may be as far as they can see. So you take an animal like cows, who are fundamentally prey animals, meaning that they evolved from prey animals that were hunted, they're on alert for everything. And so if they see something on the horizon, that puts them on alert. That means that they know that something has entered their extrapersonal space. Now, as you get closer to the animal, then you kind of get into their very close-up zone, and we would call that their peripersonal space. And that zone, depending on which scientist you ask, if you have a limb that you can extend, so like primates, like us, the peripersonal space is generally kind of what you can touch, kind of things within your graspable reach. For an animal that's a quadruped that doesn't do that, it's a little different. It's probably the zone in which they can immediately touch something or affect something, or in the case of cows, butt you with their head. And that, too, can expand and shrink a little bit. But to get into that inner zone, they have to let you in. They have to know that you're not a threat. And that takes some effort on the human's part.
And that takes not only some effort, but some repetition, right? Because for them to, I assume they have to see kind of you or the same person over time and repeatedly for that to be more and more comfortable for the animal.
That's right. So one of the interesting things to me is that even though the book is called Cow Puppy, which to me means that the cows kind of act like puppies, they're different than dogs in many ways. So the cows are very good at recognizing people and other cows that they know, and this has been proven in several studies, and they will very obviously discriminate against people that they haven't seen before. They will typically view them as a potential threat. Now, that's in contrast to many dogs I know, basically, who everyone's their friend, right? So that's one difference. And then in order to kind of get moved into the circle of trust, as we say, you have to gain their trust. And that only occurs through repetition and through repeated interactions that to the cow are positive. So they eventually accept you as part of the herd.
And would being positive just be not negative, or does there have to be something more overt for them to perceive it as positive? The reason I'm asking is because after reading the book, I was thinking, I kind of live on the other side of the state, so every Wednesday I drive across the state to do this radio show, and I pass hunks of farmland with lots of cows. And I thought, if I pulled over and approached some of the cows, would I be able to have any sort of friendly encounter? And then it felt like, from what your book says, that could only possibly happen with regular visits with the very same cows, which probably be hard to actually pull off. But that'd be the only chance I would have, actually, right?
Probably. I'm assuming that those cows have not had a lot of human interaction. So if they're kind of out on the range, they're probably being managed. They probably get vaccines, and then they get turned loose, and that's it.
Yeah.
So a human being coming up to them would probably be viewed as something novel and therefore potentially threatening. So it's only through the repetition that when they see humans that aren't doing something unpleasant to them that they would then allow you to approach. And that was a situation with at least two of my original cows, the two females who were, pretty standoffish initially, And Lucy, the boss cow, didn't let me touch her for 6 months.
Yeah, that seemed like that was a big part of the story, because that did evolve, but it took a while.
It did. Initially, I kind of wrote her off as that was just her personality. She just was standoffish, didn't want to interact with people, and that was okay. But then I learned over time that, in fact, that wasn't really part of her personality. That was just her being cautious. And I, of course, don't know what her prior experiences were, but eventually she came to trust me, and now is frankly one of the most affectionate and most loyal of the bunch.
So I guess when something like that shifts, it kind of flips almost to the other end of the spectrum, because if she was super standoffish and reluctant to sort of acknowledge you or get involved, and now where we are, it's like it's hard to imagine it's the same cow.
Yeah, I mean, I look back over time, and you mentioned the transformation. I mean, part of it, a big part of it, was me, but there was also transformations going on with the cows themselves.
Yeah, which is really really interesting, I think. And just because you made an interesting reference that might want to elaborate for our listeners, calling her the boss cow, can you just say a little bit more about what that means?
Well, I mean, the herd is pretty hierarchical, and I gather this is fairly standard amongst the cattle people. It's not necessarily the bull or the male that is the leader. In fact, it's probably more frequently the case that it's one of the females. And so when I say she's the boss cow, it's pretty obvious if you see kind of how the other cows treat her with deference. So if she walks into the group, it's like Moses parting the Red Seas. They just part.
Lucy's here. Let's stand at attention, I guess, right? Yeah.
Well, it's just, you know, give her space. And the other way you can tell is they all have kind of some little scrapes on their flanks where they horn each other, because my cows have horns, and you know, that's how they push each other aside. It's just like they horn or headbutt. Lucy doesn't have any scrapes on her, which shows that nobody would dare do that to her.
Wow. Nobody's going to lay a horn on Lucy, I guess it sounds like.
Nope.
Yeah. Interesting. All right, well, let's take a call. We have a caller here. Let's get them involved in the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animal with Dr. Gregory Burns.
Hello?
Hello, it's you. Go ahead, please.
Oh, I just want to know why, what he was using the cows for on his farm. Were they for milk or meat? And does he still eat meat now?
Okay. Dr. Burns?
Yeah. Oh, great question. So these are actually miniature cows, and the reason I got miniature cows is because, not knowing anything about cows, I was a little intimidated by the full-sized version. So originally I got them to just be part of the farm system, and so the idea was they would graze on the pastures, eat the grass, then I would collect their manure, which I would then compost and turn into the food garden. So their primary purpose was as biological reactors to recycle nitrogen. So they are not for meat. And as far as dairy goes, they're not really dairy. That has passed. The cows who have had calves are done doing that. And they were not really too fond of me trying to pull on their udders anyway, and I didn't feel like going through the trouble. So they are for pasture management, and now they provide comfort and therapy to people who want to sit with them.
Yeah, which I definitely want to get into at some point, because that, I think, is kind of a whole fascinating wrinkle that, again, many of us probably wouldn't have anticipated. But before we do that, on a show called Talking Animals, it's almost incumbent on us, I think, to discuss cow communication. So maybe you could talk first about cow vocalizations beyond the obvious moo that many of us know, or at least stereotypically know, and then maybe a summary of what you've learned about either cow-to-cow communications, and then I guess there's gender differences in there that we should address, and maybe about cow-human communication that you learned over your initial stint with them.
Yeah, sure. So everyone knows the cow goes moo, right?
Yeah.
Although I will say, to my ear, it doesn't actually sound that way. It's a little more kind of two syllables, like ma, something like that. But why they do that is a bit of a debate. Most of the literature would say that cows moo when they're in some form of distress. And I think that's largely because people have observed them, either in dairies or on ranches where they're eventually headed to become meat. So, of course, when they vocalize, they're going to be distressed. Now, my cows moo less and less, so I guess that means that they're in no distress. One of the situations that they do consistently do it is from mama to calf. And the mamas are extremely protective of their babies. And calves will typically nurse for, if left naturally, they'll nurse for about 6 months, anywhere from 6 to 8 months. And so it's kind of like humans, you know, they're attached to their mother for a long time. And the mama will call their calf. When the calf gets too far away, they will call. And it's clear that the calf imprints on that, and they learn what their mother sounds like. And like human children, they eventually learn to ignore it, too.
Of course.
So that's typically when they vocalize. Sometimes they vocalize to me when they're happy or excited. They think, you know, they're going to get treats. But the vocalizations I find even more interesting than that are the ones that are very subtle. So they will communicate by snorting and grunting and doing what I would call sub-vocalizations, kind of under their breath. Think like the sound Marge Simpson makes when she's unhappy. It's very close in. You have to be close to hear it. It's very interesting.
Wow. Yeah, so really there is, just as someone might imagine, if you stepped really into any kind of animal realm, very specific kind of communication that means very specific kinds of things.
That's right. So, you know, it's a foundation of people who study animal communication. The tenet is that the animals make sounds. There has to be a sender and there has to be a receiver. They don't vocalize just for the heck of it, right? They're sending a message, and yeah, there's an expectation that it's received. So it does serve important functions.
Okay, cool. Well, we got an email here that says, he didn't answer the caller's question. Does he still eat meat after caring so much for them?
So it's a tricky question. I do not call myself a vegetarian or a vegan, primarily because I find the terms to be absolute. And I don't eat much meat, if any, but I will on occasion, special occasions, if I know where it comes from and who raised it. My approach is to know where my food comes from and make choices in which the animals, if it's an animal product, where I know that it's been raised well.
Okay. There we go. So to what extent, overall, from all your, you know, like in the year four of your experience with the farm and the various members of the cattle herd, to what extent do you feel cows are misunderstood and underappreciated, perhaps?
I think they're hugely misunderstood and underappreciated, largely because I don't think most people have had the opportunity to interact with them in any meaningful way, if at all. Right. So as you related, I think most people's experience with cattle is from the side of a road, you know, zooming by in a car and you see these animals that dot the landscape and it appears that they're almost inert. You know, they're just out there grazing. And so, you know, we humans tend to conflate slowness with dumbness. But that's a huge mistake. I mean, they are not, one, they're not actually very slow. They're deliberate, but I assure you they can move a lot faster than you and I, and they're not dumb. They, in many ways, they're smarter than my dogs are.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. Again, just something that most people wouldn't have occasion to experience, and they just wouldn't be able to draw that conclusion, but I think it's really important. In fact, I'm wondering if one of your aspirations for Cow Puppy is to sort of help alter the perception of cows.
It is. I mean, you know, I wrote the book because, you know, as I said, I fell in love with them, and they fell in love with me, too, and it's just a story that I wanted to tell because it was so exciting to me and so rewarding what I learned about them. And not just, you know, not just the fact that they're intelligent, I think, but how emotional they are. They are surprisingly emotional and demonstrative, and they are more They are so affectionate with me. It makes it very much more special than with dogs, because the fact dogs are easy. Dogs are evolved to kind of be our sycophants, and you know, everyone's a dog's friend. But with the cows, it's hard earned, and when they accept you into their social circle, it's very special, and they don't ask for much. They're just very gentle creatures.
Yeah. No, it's, again, I just think there's all kinds of revelations in the book about cows, and which kind of brings me to thinking that we can't really have a conversation, or at least what couldn't be considered complete, about the book without touching on at least two topics that we haven't yet. One is your friend Ken, whom you met upon moving to your farm and dedicated the book to. And then also kind of maybe overlapping your realization that cows can project healing power, I guess, of a sort. And you started holding therapeutic groups at the farm featuring the cows. So in some ways, I think these kind of intersect, but maybe you could respond in whatever way you'd like to both major points.
Yeah, so, you know, we began by talking about transformation. And so I moved to the country, and as I alluded to, the issue of being self-sufficient is true, but you still need help. And, God, I needed help not doing anything. And I was lucky enough that my closest neighbor, Pastor Ken, a retired pastor, who grew up in the area and had a lot of experience farming and with cattle in particular, we bonded over the cows. Now, we are probably about as different as you can imagine. I'm a professor, teacher at the university in Atlanta, and he's a retired pastor, a Vietnam veteran, with kind of a raft of ailments from that. And yet we became best friends, and we bonded over the cows, and spent many evenings together sitting with the cows, watching the sunset, and just taking in the tranquility of it all. And kind of over those sessions we had, we started talking about, well, how great this is and how relaxing it is and how calming it is and how we really need to share that with other people who want the same thing. And so we started, you know, bringing other people to the farm and letting them sit with the cows, both as education, but also as just, you know, you could call it therapy. I just call it relaxation. But I think people leave feeling better for it.
So if people were to come to one of those sessions, like, what would happen and how long would it last? And typically, if people have shared experiences, which I gather they probably do, how would they feel when they walked away from that given day's or given night's session?
Yeah, well, you know, since most people haven't really kind of had any up-close experience, the first thing I do is brief them and tell them, you know, many of the things that we've already discussed here, but also how to behave around cows. They don't like sudden movements. I said, pretend you're a sloth, you know, just move slowly, no sudden noises, you know, calm. They will pick up on states of agitation. And then what to do if in fact they decide they don't want you in their space and start headbutting you, you know, don't run away because they will run faster than you and chase you down. So just kind of basic safety things, and then usually we just kind of go, and afternoons are best for this because the cows have usually finished their midday graze and are usually lying down under a tree chewing their cud, and so we go and just sit down next to them. And usually the younger ones will come up and investigate, and if they're really relaxed, they'll just lie down too, and we'll just sit there for half an hour or so.
And is it pretty much silent for that half an hour?
Well, we can chit-chat, but I think it kind of kills the mood if the humans are talking. So I think it's best if you just sit there silently and listen to the cows chewing.
And to what extent do you think there's a sense of spirituality amongst cows, or at least amongst these sessions?
Well, I don't think the cows are spiritual in the sense they're just doing what they're biologically evolved to do.
But they help create a sense, it sounds like, of something at least resembling spirituality in these sessions.
For me, yes. I mean, I think the better word is grounding, because you literally are grounded with them. Sitting on the ground and you're surrounded by kind of all this biology happening, and it kind of tunes you into the environment in ways that, you know, we don't normally slow down and pay attention to.
Wow. Well, that sounds like a pretty powerful session. I'd like to sit in on one of those one of these days. But all right, Dr. Burns, I think we kind of reached the end of our time together. So we've been speaking with Dr. Gregory Burns. His new book is Cow Puppy, An Unexpected Friendship and a Scientist's Journey into the Secret World of Cows. It came out last week, and so you can get it wherever you get your books. And Dr. Burns, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. I really enjoyed speaking with you, and obviously, as I noted, really enjoyed the book.
Thanks, Duncan, and you're welcome to a cow therapy session anytime you're in Atlanta.
Okay, I might make a special trip. All right, thanks again.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
In a moment or two, I'll speak with Reagan Blessinger of the Humane Society of Tampa Bay about their wonderful ongoing program, Paws for Literacy, which enables young kids to read to animals currently living in the shelter. We'll learn more about Paws for Literacy when Reagan joins me in just a moment here on Talking Animals. Before that, though, I want to tell you about a special summit featuring Jane Goodall taking place locally in just over 2 weeks' time. Roots and Shoots, Jane Goodall's initiative to empower young people to affect positive change in their communities, is having a youth environment summit at Tropicana Field on September 14th and 15th, including a talk given by Dr. Goodall herself. So you can find out more by going to rootsandshoots.org/Tampa Bay Hope in Action, and if they're looking for hands-on exhibits for the kids during lunch breaks in the expo hall, I want to show children and other participating opportunities to get involved locally, meet animals, make art, and hang out. So that's, again, Hope in Action, September 14th and 15th, Tropicana Field, featuring a talk by Dr. Jane Goodall, of course, a guest a couple different times on this show. Right now, we're going to hear a song that fits well, I think, with Dr. Burns' book and our conversation we just had. This is Cows Around by Cord Blunden, Talking Animals.
And share what I have found. May you always have cows around. What else you gonna spend that extra money on? What else is gonna get you up hours before dawn? What else is gonna keep you toiling on and on and on? May you always have cows around. Come on, you know that you got too much time on your hands. Not merely enough complication in your plans. You need to invite all of the frustration that you can. May you always have cows around. Everything is better with some cows around. Living in town sometimes brings me down. Let me bestow this western blessing, leave you saddle bound. Have cows around. What else can make the bishop swear like a sailor might? What else can cause such tension between a man and his wife? What else could ever bring all these enhancements to your life? May you always have cows around. What else is gonna get out when you don't close the gate? What else will make you prematurely show your age? What else will take a run at you in a fit of bovine rage? May you always have cows around. Well, everything is better with some cows around. Living in town sometimes brings me down. And although this western blessing leaves you cattle bound, may you always have cows around. Limousine, Shorthorn, Charley, Watusi, too. Texas Longhorn, Corey, any Romagnola, Galloway, and Angus. from a Bringus, Jersey, Guernsey, Holstein, hey! Well, you might have had to let them dig for oil and gas. You might have had to turn the place to an exotic game ranch. You might have had to do all kinds of things to raise the cash so you'd always have cows around. Well, how else you gonna lose it all like Daddy did? What else will make sure you leave nothing for your kids? It's too late now, you know it is. You might as well admit that you're a badly flawed and sentimental masochisticness, and that despite all the statistics and the advice that you get, you will always have cows around. Yeah, everything is better with cows around. Living in town sometimes brings me down. Well, you won't know what you're missing till you hear that sound. May you always have cows around. May you always have cows around.
That's Cor Blunt here with Cows Around on Talking Animals. Right now, we're going to step into the comedy corner with something from a guy named Tim Harmston. Here's a piece called Seagull. Tim Harmston in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals on WNF.
I saw a seagull flying around in the sky. It was going around and around and around. I looked at it and I said, "Seagull, you could be anywhere in the world right now. Why are you in the parking lot at JCPenney's?" And then I thought, why am I in the parking lot at JCPenney's? And then I remembered Arnold Palmer casual wear. 50% off. You look like a jerk if you don't go.
Tim Harmston in today's Comedy Corner with a piece called Seagull, taken from his album The Most Bees Ever. Right now it's time to speak with the Reagan Buster of the Humane Society of Tampa Bay about their terrific program Pause for Literacy. Here's Reagan on Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Reagan.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals.
Thank you for having me.
So can you just at least, let's start off with, maybe you could briefly describe Pause for Literacy.
Yeah, so at the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, we have a humane education department with a lot of different programs. And Pause for Literacy happens every Tuesday and Thursday from 2:45 to 4 o'clock. And we have children 5 and up come in. They can either bring their own books, or we have animal-related books here. We also have some stools. So they come in, they check in, and then they take their school, they take their books, and then they go down to the shelter and read to the animals. So it's like a really good opportunity for them to practice their reading, especially reading out loud. And then the animals love it because it's a good enrichment.
That sounds really cool. So who started this program and when was that?
Yeah, so it has been around for about 10 years. Our previous humane education manager, she started it. She was a teacher, and so she really wanted to kind of think of how we can include animals and reading, because, of course, reading is so important, and sure, kind of put them together.
That's great. So how does someone, if they're just hearing about it for the first time now, how does someone sign up or register or get involved?
Yeah, so go to our website, humanesocietytampa.org. Under our Humane Education Department's Pause for Literacy, it's free. You don't have to pay anything. Just sign up just so we know you're coming. We can have enough stools out and enough books. And then just come on in. And they can decide whether you want to read to dogs, cats, guinea pigs, rabbits. I mean, they can really walk around through all the adoptables and read as much as they'd like.
That's great. Sounds like there's a lot of choice. So is there a particular age range that this is kind of aimed at or limited to?
5 and up, we typically see about 5 to 10-year-olds. But, I mean, really, anyone can come in and read to the animals. The animals come up to the front of the kennels, and they'll kind of sit there and listen. So it's really nice to see.
Are there certain animals that you guys have just noted are particularly amenable to this, and others maybe who, for one reason or another, aren't as welcoming of that kind of thing?
Yeah, the dogs seem to pay a little bit more attention than the cats, definitely. And then there are some dogs that will come and kind of lay down. Some kind of want to get involved with the storytelling and might start barking a little bit, but
okay.
That's okay.
Well, those are just background sound effects.
Exactly.
Kind of punctuating the story, probably, yeah. And if they are like 5 or around that, I assume they probably need to have some kind of adult with them and bring them at least to the shelter? Or?
Yes, yeah. We ask that a parent or guardian stays with them the whole time and walk around with them. Typically, you know, everyone seems like pretty happy walking around the shelter with them. So,
but you made it sound like adults could do this. So, like, if I wanted to come in and read to a dog, would I be able to get in on this, or is that kind of at a separate time under a separate kind of program?
Technically be a little different. That's like a volunteer kind of shift, but
okay.
If parents or guardians want to also read with their kid and their kids there, we invite them to do that.
That's great. And what sort of books typically get read in Pause for Literacy?
Anything animal related. So we get donated books pretty often, thankfully, and they all have some sort of animal story or animal welfare focused, but people can bring in their own books. So if they need to read a book for school, and this is a good way for them to do it.
That sounds really cool. Sounds like there's plenty of options, and from what kind of animal you're reading to what kind of book you're reading, and sounds like it's really great. And do people, in your experience, do they come multiple times, typically the kids, or how does that?
Yes. Yeah, we have people who come in weekly. They'll come in every single week, especially during the school year, to come read. I think they're using their books that they have to read for class.
Sure. Well, what a great way to get an assignment done with in the company of a nice animal. I mean, that, you know, I would do it if I were 5 years old or thereabouts, or even a lot older. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, no, it's awesome.
Okay, so basically they just go to find out more or to sign up, basically just go to the Humane Society of Tampa Bay website and look under the Humane Education tab, and then you can kind of take it from there.
Yep, take it from there and just register, let us know you're coming, and then come on in.
Great. Well, this sounds really cool, and I appreciate you taking the time to kind of talk with us a little bit about it. I always like the looks of it, and I'm meaning to talk to you guys about it for a while, so this is very cool. So thanks. This has been Reagan Blessinger of the Humane Society of Tampa Bay talking about, again, the terrific program Pause for Literacy. Thanks again, Reagan.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Coming up on WNF, it's The Conversation, the great show hosted by Mario Nunez and Joe Kane Carter. After that, we shift back to music programming with Jim Bannon, holding forth from 1 to 3, followed by Jim Coley, I believe it is, in today for Nancy C, hosting the Wednesday Traffic Jam from 3 to 6, at which point our terrific Wednesday night block of Latin music kicks in. So that's all coming up here on 88.5 WNF. Meanwhile, on this show at the moment is a prize for an animal tune. I'll be offering something fabulous from the Talking Animals Vault to the first person who calls 813-239-9663. And see if they can correctly name this animal tune. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals on WNF.
Johnny is a joker. He's a bird. A very funny joker, he's a bird. But when he jokes, my honey, he's a
a dog.
He's joking, ain't so funny.
What a dog.
Johnny is a joker that's trying to steal my baby.
He's a bird dog.
Johnny sings a love song
like a bird.
Sings the sweetest love song
you ever heard.
But when he sings to my gal,
what a howl.
To me he's just a wolf dog
on the prowl.
Johnny wants to fly away.
Take any guesses that we get. Probably off air just after the show, because we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF. Again, next Wednesday, September 4th, it's Fun Drive Fun. And I'll be joined by the fabulous Flea right here on Talking Animals, raising money for WMNF in that fall Fun Drive. So again, Fun Drive enables WMNF to continue to afford all its excellent programming and other resources that it offers all across Tampa Bay and beyond. So please help us, help WMNF. Visit WMNF.org. In the upper right-hand corner, click on Donate Now and secure donation form. It opens up. Towards the bottom, they will designate to pick a show. There's a drop-down menu for that purpose, and just please select TLA Talking Animals so that our show is credited with your donation. Really appreciate it. It gives us a little bit of a head start on our massive fundraising goal. So I also invite you to visit TalkAnimals.net for broadcast. Our audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. My Apple Podcasts are there too. Also links to our social media pages and more. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Leaky Watchy, and beyond. Conversation is up next alongside the Scoop. And then Jim Bannon takes over and kicks back into music after that here on WMNF. Catch you next week for the Fun Drive. Thanks so much. WMNF Tampa.